You needn't be a communist to care about your community.
Don't touch that, it's growing. Be careful, you guys.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
Indeed, as alluded to earlier by Olivia, I had the privilege of being joined by just in the 95BFM studio earlier, actually it was last week, to discuss their part in Wild Projects, a community and art initiative, which is kind of set up in Albert Park currently. I was wandering through the park one day and saw some scaffolding around a tree, so decided to find out what it was all about and get Richard in to discuss what Wild Projects is, and I started out by asking kind of precisely that.
In Albert Park, we've got a art installation that will be up and running till next Sunday. It's called Walking in Trees, and it's presented by Wild Projects, which is a new platform that I've devised with some friends and artists that support public projects around art and ecology, and thinking about ideas of building and unbuilding the city.
When you say building and unbuilding the city, what do you mean?
So just the idea that the urban or reality is constructed, and it's being constructed to serve certain narratives. And so Albert Park is a really interesting site to start unpacking this. And so on the surface, Albert Park is this very genteel Victorian park that was built in the late 19th century. But it has an amazing history, and a large part of that history is thanks to the fact that it's next to universities. But all we see is this frozen in time, late 19th century park. So for instance, it's built on the ashes from one of the oldest volcanoes in the Auckland Isthmus that's under the Metropolis Hotel. And then Rangipuke was the pā and the papakāinga that was on that ground, on those grounds. And because of that volcanic ash, it was really fertile. And the local spring by the Auckland University Law School. And then it went on to be a military barracks that is also, you know, really nicely linked into Auckland University by the library that, you know, 100 metres still survives. And sort of the interesting thing about the history of the city is that the barracks walls were actually built predominantly by local Māori, and but also constructed for the British because of their fears about iwi from the north coming to attack, but also the history that Auckland was, that Ngāti Whātua invited the British to set up the capital here. And so all of these kind of nice entanglements have happened. But Albert Park also has the tunnels, like, you know, nearly 4 kilometres of tunnels. And so all of these histories are brought up through the project, through conversations and sandwich boards and the workshops we're offering. And one really interesting thing for me is that around the Queen Victoria statue, which Walking in Trees project is, was the site of the first gay liberation protest in 1972, and feminist protests, anti-war protests. And all of these narratives are hidden, like they're erased from the park. And so part of thinking about the ecologies and the interconnectedness is around exhuming those histories.
Why do you think those histories aren't necessarily apparent in the park? Or why do you think they've been erased from what we see in the park or as the park?
Yeah, I mean, it serves the power structures that be. Like, for instance, yeah, I have friends who are involved with Seoul and Ihu Matau, and just uncovering the history of Albert Park, it's deeply interrelated with that conversation across the city. And so Governor Gray, who signed off on the land confiscation in the late 19th century, there's a statue of him in Albert Park, and he donated most of the trees, including the tree that we've built around. And interestingly enough, I found that in the 80s, in the mid-80s, his head was knocked off, and that head is it's still missing. So the original head is probably in someone's flat. It's a great story, keep it there. But I also unearthed these ransom notes that were in the Ponsonby post office in the 90s, and some really horrible quotes from Governor Gray, who on the surface learnt te reo and were friends with important chiefs, but on the other hand was definitely, here to colonize the country, and in really unethical ways, like we saw at Ihu Matau and the history there. But also the fact that, you know, the statue still is there and money has been spent to protect it and restore it, and for something that's very offensive to a large part of the population of the city.
You mentioned that there are some workshops that will be ongoing on site and around within the projects. A, what are they? And B, how do they relate to the context of Albert Park and Tamaki Makaurau in general?
We've got, next Wednesday, we've got a drawing workshop. So thinking about kind of observation, and it's a session as opposed to being taught something, but kind of loose, slowing down and thinking, and taking into account maybe the more than human life in the park, like the trees. And we're collaborating with For the Love of Bees, so Sarah and Levi. And so Sarah's going to be doing a walk on Friday looking at fungi for the future. So around her interest in fungi and the place in ecology and communication. And, you know, larger things. I just saw that there was research out of AUT, for instance, and this kauri tree had been chopped down, and 2 years later it was still living thanks to, you know, the ecology of the trees around it, keeping it alive. We also have next Saturday, the 14th, artist Christina Houghton will be doing a wild walk, which is open to younger people as well. And so looking at how art might activate or be important in terms of environmental and ecological conversations, and how art's really important for communicating science. And then I'm going to do one on Sunday called Cruising the Park, which is a queer drawing workshop, really paying respect to queer ancestors in terms of that site, and how, and also cruising histories, political histories, the importance of parks and queer histories, present and past. And so kind of all of these things that aren't on the surface of the park if you were just to walk through it.
How important is it to you and to the others involved in the projects to highlight the nature of the park being more than just what we see it as?
The project is operating in, you know, in a simplistic way. It's that literally changing your perspective by lifting you like 7.5 meters into the air. And so you have that kind of, you know, bird's eye view of the park, or you're just taken out of your everyday slightly through this intervention. And then figuratively, that is through the workshops and the talks and the sandwich boards and so forth. And I think that's kind of the role of art and philosophy. It's about opening up the possibility that you might see your world in different ways and through different lenses.
When you talk about doing the cruising tours or bringing the history of cruising perhaps to light, do you think that these are things that have been stigmatized and pushed below, say, the mainstream, for lack of a better term, and really heavily affected people and their like interactions with these spaces and within public space as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really interesting thing, and I, because I'm personally interested in queer ecologies in terms of my art practice and research, and I mean, one thing about the intersection between colonization and homophobia is that in New Zealand, the moment that the treaty was signed and British law was brought in was the moment that homosexual acts between men was outlawed and also defined in the criminal code as crimes against nature. So there's this kind of fabric that's permeated queer discourse around the unnatural. But interestingly enough, as people become obsessed with safety, parks are cleared in terms of sight lines, which is, it's not beneficial for insects or animals to nest or to breed or to feed, but it's also, it means that cruising doesn't take place. So there's this kind of nice intersection between what's good for cruising is good for nature, and there's kind of like this idea that our normative practices are like quote unquote natural. And so even though cruising, I know in Albert Park, has been probably replaced with you know, online apps, and it might not happen, and it's like highly lit and it's highly filmed, like there's CCTV cameras everywhere, but there are stories, there are histories about people hooking up in the public toilets, and that's a history that, because it's taboo or it's non-normative or it's niche, it just doesn't get recorded. Or also when at the heyday it was illegal until 1987. And there was a great, Michael Stevens gave a talk at the Auckland Museum, and he was talking about going to university in the late 70s. And they would do a milk run. They'd call it the milk run. And it was basically a competition between him and his friends to go from the Albert Park toilet to Wellesley Street to the Durham Lane toilet. And the person who could hook up with someone in every site would win this milk run. And so, you know, like these histories, these really fascinating histories that are just kind of lost.
Is it an important part of the project to kind of highlight the intersection of non-normative practice and ecology, and both of how they don't necessarily formally fit into colonial systems?
Yeah, I mean, this Timothy Morden wrote this really great article a few years ago on queer ecologies, and the fact that if one is to actually look at, you know, nature, you will understand how very queer nature is. And for instance, the Himalayan cedar that we've built around is a hermaphrodite. It invites other species into its reproduction. And so you're just laying like the very simple kind of life of a tree, for instance. It sounds very queer. It sounds very non-colonial, Christian, normative practices. And so the thing is that the answer about protecting the environment or understanding ecologies might be with kind of unbuilding these concepts we have of what nature is. It might be something really fundamental like that, and about bringing things together that we might not naturally bring together.
If people want to involve themselves in this project or get along, how can they find you in both the physical space and the digital space?
So if you just go Wild Projects, or, and that's Wild with an E, so WILDE Projects, on Facebook, our page will come up. And also all the workshops are free, and they will be on the Facebook page. And also if you come to Albert Park by the Floral Clock, we have them advertised on the sandwich board there.
Is there a site, GHT rather than TE, to hold more artworks like this in the future, perhaps in other parks around Tamaki Makaurau?
Yeah, that would be wonderful, and it's an ongoing conversation, and this is the first iteration. And I mean, we're tying in with lots of amazing creative people doing other things, so for the love of bees, and I know that Paris Kirby is doing similar projects in North Head at the end of the year, and so I think we'll just fit within the fabric of what's already out there. And I mean, this project is supported by the Waitemata Local Board and the Regional Council. And, you know, Barbara Holloway is really amazing in terms of Activate Auckland. So if the support is there, and I know that there's a whole community of amazing artists, I'm sure there will be other sites that we activate.
I can't reach the potatoes.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
I'm going to name this one Cynthia.
Go forth and prosper.